it seems, to have a dream to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How's it going this week? How's things at the shop? How's things around the bench? Long time no talk. Glad to be chatting with you again. It's good to be back. I'm recording this from a snowy Victoria, British Columbia. Yeah, well, we actually have been getting a lot of snow. It melts right away, and then everything's green underneath. But it was snowing again this morning to the point where the buses didn't even run until like 9 o'clock, when it was already like +3 and sunny. So who knows? It's an odd place, but I like it. Today on the show, I talk with Daniel Saez of Noctua Bakery in Toronto, in the Junction area of Toronto. And Daniel's a pretty awesome guy. We clicked pretty early on in this chat, as you're going to find out in a couple of minutes. I'm excited to share this one with you. Before then, a couple of notes and announcements and updates and that kind of thing. I've had a bit of a week. My computer packed it in. My laptop packed it in just over a week ago now. And it's taken me an entire week to rebuild it and get everything restored and back and that kind of thing. It wasn't my fault that it broke, but it kind of was, because it was running this big Windows update thing. And the Windows update thing didn't take. And so then I had to poke around and try and roll it back to an old version of Windows, and that didn't work. So I had to rebuild the whole thing and back up all my data and try and restore it. And then I couldn't restore it. And so I dug around and found it and that kind of thing. All of the old podcast episodes were saved because I have a decent backup system for that. In fact, I finally, after a week, I got everything back working, up to, but not including, my audio recording software. When I was trying to edit down the conversation with Daniel today, it was a bit of an adventure, because I had to load a new version of the audio program and get that going, and all the buttons have moved, and all of my little tips and tricks and hotkeys and that kind of stuff had all disappeared. So I had to teach myself again how to use this gear. But it turned out okay, and everything's back. All I have to do is redo my bookkeeping for my little coaching and consulting and podcasting and community management business. Just 6 months worth, that's all, because I lost that. So I'm rebuilding all of that. But otherwise, I escaped unscathed for the most part. So just goes to show you, have good backups in place. Cloud storage is good. A backup service in addition to cloud storage is good. A backup service, cloud storage, and an external hard drive is also good. And then actually make sure that they run. Because even with my bookkeeping stuff, the only problem in the whole scheme of things was that my backup wasn't working. And I didn't fix it in time. So there you go. A lesson to learn. Learn from my pain, okay? Back up your stuff. And that's all I have to say on that. What else is going on? Bakers for Bakers. That's a cool thing. You know, if you've listened to the show at all, you know I talk about Bakers for Bakers a ton. And it's a free online community for professional bakers and bakery owners from all over the world to get together and share their knowledge, share their pain, share their joy, get advice, give advice, that kind of thing. And it's a really cool place. It's all done with a lot of kindness as well. It's a good group of people that are there. They're welcoming to new members and very supportive of each other. So if you haven't been part of it, head over to bakers4bakers.org and sign up and join in and join the conversation over there. The reason I mention it right now is we had a really cool talk last week. We're doing a monthly Zoom call called a Baker Roundtable. That I'm hosting on Tuesdays, usually like the second week or the third week of the month. Last week, we talked about whole grain baking and whole grain fermentation and how making the shift from white flour to whole grains, what that does to your schedules and what that does to your processes and how to think about it. And it was a lot of fun. It was a really good call. There were folks from all over, from Canada, from the States. We had a woman from Austria, hi Veronica, that are all at different stages of the journey and were very open to share what they were doing and what wasn't working and what was working. We had a couple of ringers in there too, because Jim Williams from Backdoor Bread was there, and Don Woodward from Evelyn's Crackers in Ontario was there, who are, in my mind anyways, two of the most experienced whole grain bakers that I know, that's for sure. And they were sharing as well. And it was really good. It was a really good time. The March call, which I'm just about to schedule. I think it's going to be about the second week of March, so about 2 weeks from now if you're listening to this on release day. And it's going to be about building out your first retail bakery. And the working title, which was suggested by Rochelle, who is one of the lovely women on the forums, is how to build out a bakery without losing your mind. And she was adamant that the without losing your mind part needed to be in the title. And so we're going to have a really fun call with that one, because there are a lot of folks on the forums that are either building out right now or have just done it in the last year or so, or are in the business planning stage, and they're all figuring out their own way to make it work. So if you haven't been part of Bakers for Bakers, go sign up. If you've been there and you haven't paid us a visit in a while, come check in. Check out the community calendar. You'll hear about all the calls, that kind of thing. So enough about that. What else? Let's see. Time to make a bit of a plug for this May for the Canadian Bakery Showcase that's going on in Vancouver. It's like a bakery expo, a pizza expo. It's brought to you by the fine folks at the Baking Association of Canada. And I'm actually going to be there. I'm going to be giving a talk on the Sunday. Oh, yeah, the dates. It's in May. It's the weekend. That is Mother's Day. I think it's the 14th and 15th, Sunday and Monday. I'm going to be giving a talk on Sunday morning on storytelling at the bakery, which is going to be awesome. I just got it. It will be future tense on that one. I'm still working on it, still putting it together. But I'm kind of excited for what we're going to talk about there, about storytelling, about marketing, about getting your message out there, and what is that message, that kind of a thing. And I'm also going to be hosting a panel on the Monday that we're still designing and pulling together. But roughly speaking, it's going to be a panel discussion with newer up-and-coming bakery owners, sort of the folks that are just in the early days of their bakery journey. And we're going to talk about it and talk about what that's like and the challenges they're facing and their priorities and their learnings and that kind of thing. So that's in the works as well. Plus, come to the show, even if it's not to see me, especially if it's not to see me, because there's going to be lots of speakers, lots of demos, a big trade show, lots of equipment guys and all of that. If you're a Canadian baker, you should come. If you're a Canadian baker on the western side of the country, you definitely should come. And if you just want to come see Vancouver, you should come to this as well. So there you go. It's not a paid plug by any means. Lord knows. But I'm going to be there. I'm excited. I've never been before, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So I don't know. Maybe if you want to reach out and we can go have some fun in Vancouver, let me know if you're coming. That'd be great. And what else? Oh, some podcast news. Why don't I share a bit of that too? You may have noticed that the podcasts are not as frequent and as regular as they have been in the past. I try and make this a weekly show coming out every Wednesday. It hasn't been working like that. And why is that? Two reasons. The reason that is easy to say and is only partially true is that I'm working part-time now at a coffee shop. And so a lot of my days are taken up actually baking, which is fine, and is a lot of fun, and I'm enjoying it, being out with people and that kind of thing. That's a bit of an excuse, though, because the real reason is that I've been really, really bad at sending out invitations to other bakers to come on the show and have a chat. And I don't know why. I've done a bunch of these. I've done, you know, we're coming up to 200 shows soon. You'd think it would get easier to send out invitations, but it actually seems to be lately getting harder. But my friend Leah has volunteered to help me out. And she's like, Mark, I want to listen to shows. I'm all caught up on the stream. I want to hear some more stuff. So here's the deal. I'm making suggestions to Leah, and Leah is sending out the invitations. So then all I have to do is, it's like, look, you know, Baker X is coming on the show and he's going to be on Zoom next Wednesday. You have to show up and have a talk. And I think that's going to help me get over this hurdle of actually sending out invitations. So thanks, Leah. I know you're listening. I think we're going to get back into the swing of, if not a weekly show, at least a fortnightly show every other week, and then try and get back to weekly and have more conversations. Because I love to have them, but my goodness, I have this stigma about asking people to come on the show. So I think we're going to short circuit that. And I'm excited for what this is going to be like. Now, we haven't totally tried this yet, so hopefully I'm not putting Leah on the spot by announcing it, but that's what we're going to do. So if you know somebody that wants to be on the show or should be on the show, or you want to hear a conversation with another baker, let me know. Email me, Mark with a K at riseuppod.com. Nominate yourself. That's fine. Hey, Mark, we should chat. Not a problem. Hey, Mark, my friend over here is really interesting. You should chat with them. Perfect. You know, I've always wanted to hear a conversation with this person. Awesome. Send me a note. Let me know who you're thinking of. Let me know if you have their contact information. Boy, that makes things go quicker. All of that. Let me know why. Let me know why this person's important to you. And we're gonna make these happen, because I'll forward it on to Leah, and invitations will go out and conversations will happen, and then audio editing will happen, and then you'll get to hear it. Okay? So yeah, if you want to know how to help the podcast out this week, let me know who we should be talking to. Mark with a K at riseuppod.com. Okay? All right. Daniel Saez, really nice guy. He's living in Toronto at the Junction area of Toronto, which sounds like a really up-and-coming, hip kind of neighborhood with lots of cool stuff going on. He's making the good stuff and really, really knocking it out of the park. But this is not his first rodeo. The man has got a story that includes being a lawyer, that includes living in Venezuela, being from Venezuela, immigrating to Canada, trying different things, having some things not go right, having a few, you know, small F failures that he had to rebound from and overcome. And now he's got Noctua Bakery, and it's an awesome place, and he's doing really, really well for himself and for his team and for his family. And we talk about all of that coming up right now. So here we go. My conversation with Daniel Saez from Noctua Bakery in Toronto, Canada. So were you baking today? Was it like, what's a normal Wednesday for you?
It was a pretty typical Wednesday. I bake probably 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And we have a baker right now who's kind of like taking a little bit of a lead in all the bread baking. And but I'm usually there with him to do the pastry. So we have a couple of wholesale customers, and we kind of like split the bake. So we bake everything for them before, and then we bake everything for the bakery for the front afterwards, just to guarantee freshness and all the stuff.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I'm usually there at 4:30, except, you know, the holidays, which is madness. And if you throw panettone in the mix, it's even more madness.
Yeah.
Sure. Usually a good Wednesday. It's today was pretty atypical in terms of not only the weather, but also I had the chance just to finish a bunch of help Guillermo Baker with the bake of the pastries. And I was able to take my son, Mateo. I have two kids. And I was able, me, yes, it's cool, but I have the chance to take Mateo for swimming.
Nice.
At the recreation center. So that was pretty, that was nice. He was over the moon. So that's nice.
How old are your kids?
Mateo is 4 and me is 8.
Oh, wow. Nice. Yeah. So you still have the little one for the whole day.
Exactly.
Yeah. Fun.
My mom and sister are visiting from Caracas. I'm originally from Caracas. So they, for lunch, and then we have
nice. I was just curious to meet you because my my friends in Arnprior, I've got they run Mighty Fine Bakehouse in Arnprior, just outside of Ottawa, and I was talking to them over Christmas, and they said, you know, you really got to talk to Daniel. Like they must have been up to your place or something, because they were raving about it. And so I said, "Well, okay, sure." So I thought, "Well, I'll check it out." And it's I don't know. I was kind of fascinated just even with your start in Venezuela. Like, how did you get into baking, and then how did you get up to Canada?
Okay, I went to law school.
Yeah.
Back in the day, yes, I went to law school, and I got a job at a big corporate firm.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not gonna say any name. It's one of the big four in accounting and taxes. And I don't know if I had a promising career there, but it was a really stressful job,
right?
And I decided to start cooking. I took a Saturday kind of like cooking class, and then I started going there every Saturday just to blow some steam, and I was doing a lot of exercise. Like I was under a lot of pressure.
Sure.
I remember that we had a class when one of the classes, one of the lessons was to make hollandaise, and we were 15 like amateur cooks in class, and I was the only one who didn't break the hollandaise. And then the professor would pull me aside and say, like, if you should consider cooking, like cooking and give it a swing, give it a try. And then it took me a while to kind of like do the transition.
Mm-hmm.
But then I quit my corporate life, as you know how that goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I started working. I took up culinary diploma in Caracas under a guy named Laurent Cantino, who was one of Daniel Boulud's sous chef in Café Daniel back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked for him, like catering. I was a tournant. I was like, you know, I was a guy who walks into the kitchen, and I was like, well, I'm probably going to get bullied all day, but I need to make myself useful. So throw me what you got. And then I went to a pastry shop called Coma, which is like a column. Coma is almost, Coma means to eat in Spanish, but it's also the Spanish word for column. And column as the grammar sign. I know I have an accent, so I don't want people to believe that it's the other column. So I was just always curious, and then I started working in catering and all that stuff. And back in the 2000s, I came to Canada for the first time because I was dating this woman whose mom was Venezuelan Canadian, and they lived here in Ontario. And I remember her mom always telling me, like, listen, if you ever decide to move, to emigrate, you should come to Canada because I think that you will do well here. And her daughter and I broke up shortly after, but then I 4 years, that was in 2005, 4 years. In 2009, I decided to come to Canada and try. That's how I met Megan from.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we went to school together.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We
went
to school together. And we were in different, when she was, I think she was in pastry and I was doing cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used to volunteer as the restaurant that was at the school under the same chef, Chef Jenny Canton. And that was the signature restaurant of the Cordon Bleu. Mm-hmm. And Megan was a garmanger pastry chef. And I was just like, I was still under a student permit. I couldn't legally work in Canada, but I was like, I showed up at the kitchen once and I was like, I just want to learn. And then yeah. I was like, sure. Like, they just let me in. We used to go there every Saturday for the full day.
Yeah.
Yeah, like open until close.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's so funny that I'm learning about, well, I don't want to make it sound bigger than it is, but I'm learning a little bit about mm-hmm. the trials of immigration through my kids who are both over in England and Scotland right now, one for school and one teaching. And my son, especially when he goes over and he's in school, but he's got the student visa and he can only mm-hmm. work so much. But he's like, I'm yeah. here. I want to learn all the things. So he's volunteering yeah. all over the place, plus working what he's allowed to do. And you just kind of, you figure it out and you take advantage of everything you can, I guess. Yeah.
What is he going to school for?
Oh, he's going to be a physiotherapist. Right. Is his thing. But he's working at a bar as a bartender and waiter and stuff, because sort of his bakery experience got him into food service, and he's mm-hmm. so he can always pick up a food service job no matter what else he's doing. So yeah
which is incredibly handy.
Yeah he was the kid that never wanted to come into the back and stuff. He would just work with customers, and then more and more after the bakery got more into more and actually cooking and stuff as well, and helping with caterers and that kind of thing. But with a lot of the employers that he works with, he has to kind of go in and explain, okay, this is all I can do. And this isn't what I'm saying. This is what the government's saying. You will get in big trouble. Yeah, and so, yeah. You know, so he's kind of, you know, I'd love to work more, but you know, this is all I can do. So,
yeah. Although I feel I was reading a little bit there. Apparently Canada is kind of relaxing a little bit though the legislation about the amount of hours that workers, foreign workers, like students,
yeah,
because the shortage in at least in hospitality industry is real. So
we have
all these kids that are coming to, let's say, Centennial College or George Brown and any other school, they're just like, sure, you don't have to, you can work as many hours as you want now. And yeah, it's needed. It's really needed. But yeah, immigration is I almost, after I finished school, I almost my visa was up, and I didn't want to go back to Venezuela with everything that was going on with Chavez and communism and corruption in the system and all the stuff. And I had the chance to either go to Peru or go to Spain.
Okay.
And I came to Toronto for a show, and I had a couple of friends who were working at Taroni, and Taroni was hiring because they were expanding. That was 12 years ago, 13 years ago. Yeah. And I ended up having a work visa with them for almost 4 years.
Nice.
And nice. I managed to stay. And yeah. That was another education and everything, you know, Italian. So it wasn't the baking aspect of the job happened later with the open source forno, but I was just doing gelato and helping out here and there and doing the grill every once in a while and working. Like
you're doing what's needed. Yeah,
exactly. Whatever it takes to pay rent.
I got it. I got it. Exactly. I'm helping out at a coffee shop now. And in the mornings. And I'm supposed to be doing baker prep, but it's like, you need someone to run orders, I'll run orders. You need someone to do dishes, I'll do dishes. Like, whatever. You know, yeah. It's like, if I'm here, it's more what needs doing, and I'll do that. Because
exactly,
get to learn everything. Yeah.
It's like Werner Herzog has this wonderful quote that he says that whenever he embarks on a new project or an idea, he's like, He gives the example. It's like waking up in the middle of the night and going to your kitchen and finding five burglars And whoever's holding the knife and looks the more menacing, that's the one that you need to take care of first. So it's the same. It's like, okay, so should I mix the bread? Should I clean the mixer? Should I do the dishes?
That's right.
Should I place a flower order?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And exactly. And you read the room, right? Yeah. It's sort of like, okay, who's, yeah. It's so funny. Oh my gosh. I feel the same thing. It's like, you'll see some new folks starting and that can't read the room. And it's sort of like, yeah. you gotta be looking for, for who needs what and who's under the most stress and all of that stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Who's arrived at the headlights?
Yeah. Because you're the, because it's,
and if you can find it, it's probably you.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Oh man. So tell me how did the shift from the culinary into the baking world kind of happen for you? Is it a gradual thing or did you have a moment? Bacon.
So when Terroni opened Sud Forno, I was helping Carlo Lazzarino, who was a pastry chef back then, and now she's a chef instructor in Centennial and George Brown here in Ontario. Mm-hmm. He's a dear friend too. I think he's the most talented pastry chef. They set out to open a bakery. So Terroni was just outsourcing all the bread and all the stuff, and Carlo was assembling his team, and with Carlo and I kind of like hit it off, like we became really good friends. He was my boss at Terroni, and I was part of the team he brought over to open the bakery. And when they used to bring in, like, Terroni always brings this intellectual capital from Italy, so they bring this incredible master baker Giuliano, and I was just like always, and Fabio Papa, who was the head baker there, and there was always this constant flow of, you know, and people, and I was just helping Carlo with everything pastry related, like making the croissants. I was hand rolling the croissants, making all the viennoiserie for him. But I used to just go upstairs to the bread area, the bread kitchen, and again, like whatever needed to get done. Like, we need to shape pizza, we need to shape bread. Like, why don't you scale out this? So that was the first kind of like contact that I have with like bread baking per se. Everything else was always been like really pastry focus, like, and but I always kind of like was in the process in a satellite kind of way, like, sure, like, this needs to be done, but the first time I actually baked bread at home is because I was catering for a private dinner, and the client wanted fresh bread, and I had the tartine book, but I didn't really have the time to kind of like dive in, and I called another baker of the city, Dave Mattacchione, who's a pizza guy, and I call him and say, dude, I need to make bread here at home and I don't have time, so would you mind spending a couple of hours? And it's true, a couple of hours ended up being more like 8 hours. but we did it, and then I was kind of like hooked. I started baking a lot at home. Yeah. And keeping like it became part of my routine.
Yeah.
To be constantly baking at home and making more bread and trying new recipes and be what's going on and talking bread and at the time when that kind of like started happening, I was still working as a line cook and something absolutely different. I was cooking fish and seafood.
Yeah.
So, but the bread has always kind of, it was, well, on my day off, I'm going to make bread. And I had a couple of Dutch ovens, and that's what I did. And I used to bake two and give one away and freeze the other one and kind of like do that. But it was pretty, I feel that it was one of the situations where it kind of like chose, I didn't choose it, it chose me. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like obey. I surrender.
Yeah.
So I surrender essentially. I was like, okay, cool. And then I everything kind of like started to gear into like, oh, well, maybe I should open a bakery. But that was a process that it lasted like 8 years.
Yeah,
like, since
sure.
I started planning.
Sure.
And I got into horrible leases and I lost money. And it was, you know, the process, like, you don't know, like, I was a liability, like, yeah. In terms of like, I don't know anything, but I'm just going to do this head on and yeah. find out what's happening.
Yeah.
And well, that was a huge lesson.
Sure. Sure. Well, and that's even with all the experience at the Italian restaurants and all of the other folks coming in and teaching you things and that, to still yeah. kind of go out and say, okay, I've got another big thing to learn here about running my own yeah. show. Yeah.
Yeah.
What were some yeah, of the things just, that kind of you discovered after you messed it up?
That I wasn't ready. That was yeah. the first one.
How so not ready, do you think?
I didn't know anything about what it takes to like open up a business.
Mm.
And I didn't have any mentorship per se.
Right.
And I realized that I had a lot of access to intellectual bread capital, so to speak. Like, I can call my friends and I was like, dude, like, the spell bread, like, how are we going to do this? And what's happening? And what is this not this? Like, how does it, like, we can talk about the intricacies of ingredients and
yes.
formulas and all the stuff. But then it's like the other side of things, like, do you have enough power in your building to get an electric oven? What about the plumbing of the building? Is that a 208? Is that a 240? Is that a 220? And I knew any. I didn't know anything about that. And in that process, when I say that you become a liability, it's like, in that process, you feel that you have an idea and a business plan on paper, but then the reality, it's a process. It's not a dogma or whatever you feel that you put on your paper. Like, whatever you put on paper is going to be a good, like, guideline. It's going to give you a few things that you need to look at the reality of, like, sure, like, did you really factor in that extra food that you need to get the dishwashing machine in there? Or how's the flow going to be? How are you going to lay it all out? Like, what's... how are you going to start? Like, I started the bakery, essentially was doing everything. I was doing bread and rolling croissants.
Yeah.
And then I was able to hire people and I didn't hire in a conventional way. Like, Roma Sanderson, our pastry chef, was like, she reached out on Instagram. She's like, are you guys hiring? And I was like, you bet I am hiring. Like, oh, God. Where am I? Don't even, like, sure. Anything you need. And another great thing, because I was like, she came on board, and not only she's incredibly proficient at what she does, but she's also like, we had a really good rapport. Like, we have a really good working relationship, and we have a similar sense of humor too. So that's also kind of like important in the day to day.
Oh, yeah.
But I realized that I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about what it really entails a business. And one of the when you work in restaurants and all the stuff, and you obviously go there, punch in and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, why aren't they doing this? Or why are they not doing that? Just, you become incredibly critical because you're not knees deep in rent and payroll. And taxes, you know, the real stuff that are instrumental for the business. Like, sure, I can mix flour and water, and I can make sure that the starches are gelatinized and that everything is cooked. But, like, it's the other things that really matter. And then it's opening a kind of war, because it's like, okay, how hospitable is the bakery? How are we as a front of the house? How are we as a team? Are we being so? It's just this endless kind of like, and infinite.
And so many folks get into it because they love working with the dough, And it's all of those things that it can just take, like, that's everything you've described is like all of your time. Like you could spend all of your time on that and, yeah, and never get near a mixer again if you don't, it, you know, and so getting the balance right for you and for the shop is so huge.
And then exactly, really, and then the family, like I'm, yeah, never, how do you do it? Like, I feel for the first year, I was like, I'm an awful dad. I'm terrible. Like, I'm always here. Yeah. I'm always tired. I'm always cranky. Like this is not, this is, cannot be this. I have to find a way to make the nourishment comes both ways.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when you went the pop-up route for a while.
I did.
Before this next, the next opening, right? Like, is that sort of how it went? Like you tried some things and then sort of backed up to pop-ups?
So after the whole, so 5 years ago, I tried to rent. 5 years ago, no, Jesus, 2015,
2016. Oh, yeah, that's seven or eight.
7 years ago, seven or eight. I tried to rent the space, and we ended up renting it, and we had into an awful lease arrangement, and we lost money, and like it was like, I was running away from a breakup, and someone really close in my family, one of my cousins, died in a motorcycle accident, and it was like this great undoing for me. Like I was in awful emotional shape, and then I kept cooking fish, and I was like, I just kept cooking and working, and I put the whole bakery thing on hold for a bit, and then I took a job at a Michelle's restaurant. Michelle is my partner. She's used to own this restaurant, The Beat, and then the pandemic happening. But before the pandemic, I kind of like started doing TV work as a TV hand, yeah, like a production assistant. So anyway, right before, I did that for a couple of years on and off. And then from my last production assistant gig, I got fired. And then I was like, well, dude, like there's not much I can do now. I might as well just give this bread thing a go and see what happens. And I started just on the Saturdays from Michelle's restaurant happens to be in the same area where we at right now.
Okay.
And the junction, and that restaurant, the building where the restaurant was scheduled for demolition and development. And I squeeze in like good, like 4 months of pop-ups every Saturday and running my croissants by hand and going to the physio every week too, because my back couldn't take it anymore. Because I was rolling almost 200, 300 pieces by hand.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And then making bread in Dutch ovens. I bought like a bunch of large Dutch ovens, and I used to essentially just put a couple of all-nighters here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And everything started like that. And then the building, we had to vacate the premises where the restaurant was and put everything in storage. And I was like, well, I might as well just take advantage of the momentum here. And I put a business plan together. I found some investors that believe in the whole thing. And it was, and then it was location. I tried to go to several other locations in the city and in the West End. And we ended up taking it's a huge lot of land, but we ended up taking like the small takeaway part of what Vesuvius Pizzeria was.
Okay.
And it already had the mechanical in, it had a walk-in, it had many things. The building is still scheduled for redevelopment, probably 3-4 years from now. But it made the most sense to jump on that it kind of like already had the bones.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of like doing, you know, the rest of the stuff. So, and it also location wise is, we're pretty blessed because it's on the kind of like the really, not only we're feeding off of the look of how much of a landmark Vesuvius was, but also it's in a really good spot in the junction, and everyone kind of like knows
okay
where it is.
Yeah.
Vesuvius, not the Baker. The Baker does have a sign, has a small sign. And then I still have people like, oh my God, I thought that, didn't Vesuvius close? And I was like, yeah, it did. And we're here now. We apologize.
It's so, like the real Vesuvius. Eh? Like you clear out some rubble and you say, okay, now we're setting up
exactly.
Again.
Yeah.
And are you close enough to where the pop-ups were that the people can come?
Oh, less than a block.
Oh wow! Oh, that close. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, less than a block.
Yeah. And that was huge too. And we kind of like everything kind of like ensemble in a way that we sought out help from marketing people, and they were like, there was someone who is helping me with marketing right now, reached out, and she's also a Junctionite.
Okay.
And she was the one who suggested, like, Amy was the one who suggested, why don't you guys try to see if you can get into Vesuvius? And I was like, I don't know, man. They're gonna demolish the building and all that stuff. She said, no, let's. And we did. And then we went there, and the space had a lot of mystique, and it has the vents, and it has a walk-in. And I was like, well, yeah, let's do it. So we ended up renting it, and I didn't have a budget for a general contractor, so I ended up wearing that hat.
Yep.
And I asked a friend to help me out with the design of the spot of the front of the house and the flow. And it took probably 4 months just to finish everything. We got it, the whole space out, because it was in pretty rough shape.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I learned a lot in that process, like a lot. Like it was, if that construct, like I feel that it was like the dark night of the soul. Everything after that is just, you know, gravy.
Yeah.
So it's tough. I don't know. Like I realized, sure, like had everything been aligned 5 years ago, for me to pursue this, or 7 years ago to pursue this, like I really didn't know anything about nothing but bread, and I was being incredibly naive.
But that sounds like all those lessons learned. You get the chance to apply them, you know. So yeah. Great, yeah. Well, and so when did this space open? I'm just trying to get the timing.
September. We took over on May 15th. 2021, and we opened on September 24th.
So about 18 months then.
We've been open 18 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. And one of the things I was reading, like digging around, reading about you in that, and you really were emphasizing sort of the community hub aspect of your bakery, sort of that this is, tell me a bit about that. What are you hoping for, and how has it been manifesting over the 18 months?
It's been manifesting. Like I set out to open a neighborhood joint.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted always. And I had a little bit of I went to Peru in 2013, and I was able to work to stash in really two high end restaurants there.
Right.
And I was like, this is not for me. Like, this is not who I am. Like, this is. Like, this is, I appreciate, like, and the discipline, and I appreciate, but this is, I don't know, this is not who
it's
I am.
It's like, not you. Yeah.
It's not me. So I wanted to open a neighborhood joint. We put emphasis on people who live in the area too, who kind of like get the neighborhood.
Yeah.
The junction is pretty particular because it's like really family oriented, and really there's a lot of strollers and a lot of moms and a lot of schools and parks, and but at the same time had this grid, this nightlife, and it's kind of like it's closer to the train as well, to the railroad, so it's kind of like it has a lot of slight grid.
Yeah,
like, I don't know how to. I'm probably lost in translation here, but
no, that's
But it's a perfect balance. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It sounds like it's a bit of transition and stuff as well, right? It's sort of you got the young folks, you got the older folks. Yeah,
and then you have all this Maltese community here, and at the same time, you have all these artists as well and industry people and all that stuff. So I was kind of like, I wanted to open a bakery. It's just like, sure, like I want to just make sure that I get good ingredients and we apply a good technique to them. And then we open on Mondays just to make sure that all the restaurant people who live in the area can have access to a freshly baked croissant. And
yeah,
and that's it. That was it. Yeah. That was it. Yeah. And that's what we got. And then, I don't know, the other things happens. It's like, we have a couple of wholesale customers. We had more, but we were like, we lost the business to some extent. And at the same time, I was like, I don't know if I want to, it has a, I don't know if I had the mind for that. And right. And I'm trying to figure that out. Yeah. I'm trying to figure that out, how to grow responsibly, because it's like, we're a pretty artisanal.
Yeah.
Pretty like yeah. we're not
and
everything
so
is made by hand, like
yeah
like we preserve oh, yeah. a lot of fruit in the summer, we and then we use that on the winter, and then we everything we smoke a couple of colas a couple of days ago, and we're gonna add that into a Cartman stew that we're gonna make. So everything is kind of like that ethos of by yeah. hand.
Yeah,
it's pretty present. So you can run a factory like that.
No, that's exactly right. And that I always yeah. had this. I had this hang up about wholesale, and I've talked to other folks mm-hmm. that trying to help me understand it more. But that was the thing for me. It's like I'm making as sort of as much product as I can this way, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. if I start pursuing wholesale accounts, then it's my only focus is going to be efficiency. Yeah. which you always like, you want to pay attention to, but the fact that it's I thought it would become my sole focus, you know, because we want consistency, the same thing year round, the same mm-hmm. quantities for cheap, you know? And I was like, yeah. nah, it's like, you've now talked about at least three of those things is not what yeah. I designed, you know?
Yeah. And, yeah. Then you go through the Harvey Dent dilemma.
Yeah.
You either die a hero or live long enough to become the villain.
Yeah.
Because you have to enforce all those systems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fun fact, like most of the requests that we got was for croissants. It was like coffee shops that were getting croissants. And I'm like, dude, like the shelf life of a croissant is 6 hours tops until you have to refresh it in the oven. So it's like, You're going to bake them off. You need to wait until they're cold. You put them in a box. You dry them. You drop them. And I don't know. Like, it's there's something to be said about that. I feel and I understand. And I really understand, let's say, if I'm a coffee shop owner, I want to offer a croissant with my, because, you know, that's memory. That's a pairing. I don't know. I'm still trying to sort that out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But you kind of nailed it from the point of view of, you have this idea of what the ultimate croissant experience is. And if you're going to put your name on that at another place where you don't, there's control required, I guess, is the thing to say, like, you know, to deliver what your vision is. So yeah, it's, I understand. You know, I guess that then the challenge becomes, you know, making a go of it without it. But, you know, but that's, yeah.
And then how do you, like, because we have a 10 burner range at the restaurant, at the bakery.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a fryers, and that's what we use for the donuts and all the stuff. So it's a conversation that I'm always having with, my coworkers. Is like, dude, like, how are we going to do this? Like, do we want to, I have no problem making bread and supplying. Like, we, oddly enough, we lost 2 customers on the holidays, over the holidays, and we gained 2 more right now for bread, which is, I always felt that bread was an easier sell, and it's an easier handle, because with the croissants, it's just too much. And then it's draining. And then every time that a croissant is not up to standards, it's just my heart just sunk. And I'm like, okay. So it's like, what's going on? How do we handle this? Like how? So it's, we still have a fair amount of wholesale right now for pastry that is manageable. And I must say that it's like, it was a blessing in disguise for us. It was like, well, okay, but the two places that we're serving now for pastries are getting a top quality product.
Yeah.
And it's better. Like, it's kinder on everyone too. I don't know if you, there was an article that came out in the El País, the Spanish newspaper, with Xavier Barriga, the baker. And he says that in order to have bakers, you need to let go of that night chef. Like, bakers, something needs to change.
Right.
On top of that. So what's your take on that? Like, what, like, night chefs are brutal.
Yeah. Brutal. Well, I can't do it. You know, I've talked to some folks I talked to a fellow, one of my friends in Rhode Island, did the night shift forever, but was able to attract people that was like, that worked for them. And they tried to get rid of it. And they found it was shifting around and stuff. People would, that particular crew, it was just easier for them to work nights. They were okay with it and stuff. I can't see it. Like, and I think he was in a really unique position, but it's like, I've done it a little bit, like, you know, 2 weeks of starting at 9 at night and stuff. And it's like, no, starting at 2:30 in the morning, I found difficult enough going all the way over. Yeah. I couldn't do, you know? Yeah. And so, yeah, it's, but that was what, you know, when I went to San Francisco and Michelle Swass and I were talking about, he was like, that's how you're going to, the same way as the fellow you cited, he said, that's how you're going to keep people in the industry is using things like refrigeration, that kind of a thing to adjust the baker's hours to be more, you know, a little bit closer to everyone else, you know?
The pastry chef baker, like, let's say that you have to bake the minestrone. Let's say you start at 4:30 or 5.
Yeah.
That's still a pretty forgiving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In terms of like, dude, like, you're at noon. Like, it's summer at noon. For me, when I was at Sudforno, I was like, man, I'm going to start my shift at 4. I'm going to be out of here by 12:30. And I'm going to go to Trinity Bellwoods, the park. And I'm going to just chill for the rest of the day and probably get drunk and just like start all over again.
It's a good day. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was, we had a night baker for a while, but man, it ended up taking its toll on everyone. Like, it's too much. And it felt that as a team, we were working in a very disjointed way as well, because sure, this guy is just like this lone wolf.
Yeah. It's so tough. How do you give feedback? How do you level set when you're not working together on things? You know, on a very small basis, I find it hard enough mixing things at the job I'm working now and someone else baking them the next day. And then we're trying to compare notes if things aren't exactly right. And is it the mix? Is it the bake or whatever? I'm just coming in one morning. I just want to see this, you know, like, it's, I need to see it happening sometimes. it's difficult.
It's tough.
For folks that aren't used to talking with each other to try and share that level of detailed feedback, you know?
Yeah. And that was another lesson. And then I was like, when Richard our night baker left, I was like, I'm not going to have another night baker.
Yeah.
Like, we can pull the occasional Christmas Eve.
Yes.
All-nighter.
Yeah.
Problem. Mm-hmm. And that's incredible. And that's fun. And that's a different energy.
Yeah.
But now when I'm baking with Guillermo, and Roma also bakes with Guillermo twice a month on Sunday, so I can get a Sunday off to have family time. it was pretty telling, because we get there and then we start. Okay, so how are we attacking the right loaf today? Are we increasing the water temperature? Are we increasing the leaven? Do you want to soak? Did you make the soaker for that with only the seeds, or did you want, like, we start troubleshooting.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot to be said about that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And this past Saturday, we had almost 10 different breads on display. And we were sold out. We had a lot of bread. And I was like, oh, dude, I'm going to, all the bread that is left over, we donated to the daily bread program. But when we finished the bake, I was like, fuck, this is a lot of bread. Like, this is a lot of bread. And, but we have a spread. We made a pan de mie. We're making this bread that is essentially, we make a scald with buckwheat.
Okay.
And, we wait until it cools down, and then we mix the dough with really hot water, like a 50 Celsius. And then we fold in, the scald, and then we wait until it's 30, and then we add the leaven. And anyway, we make this batar with it. And we're pretty happy. Like, it was like this incredible discovery. And then we started like, oh, why don't we just add toasted corn flour, toasted buckwheat. And then we keep troubleshooting. Yeah. And we're probably going to keep troubleshooting until. But
sounds amazing, though.
Oh, man. Like, we were so happy with the result that I was like, man. But that's what happens is that collaboration that is essentially... It's given a gateway for the idea to kind of like become materialized into what it is.
That's my favorite thing in the world is you know, talking with another baker about that stuff and working on it together. Mm-hmm. It's like improv, but it's with bread at the end, you know, because you're like, yeah. Well, it's, you know, you say something else, you know, yes, and we'll just start building out and let's see how it goes, you know? Yeah. So cool.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. Those are the moments.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you got me even a while ago when we were talking about setting up for the folks in the neighborhood when you said, you know, we're open Mondays for folks in the, so folks in the industry can get their food. I thought that encapsulates for me knowing who your bakery is for and who are the people in your neighborhood and what do they need and how do you link it up? Like, that's so neat to say like, hey, yeah, this is the fabric of this community includes folks that's their one day off. So let's give them the good stuff. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. So cool. We're working on a lunch program as well, because that's the other, there's an opportunity there.
Yeah.
And that will allow us to kind of like generate more cash flow and also, you know, compensate a little bit. Like I don't know. Like we obviously, sure, like it's great when you make something and it reaches a fair amount of a lot of people if you want. But at the same time, the way that we're set up right now and the way that we kind of like want to do it, it's just like, let's make this and we make it great. And that's it. And then we do a little very good the day after.
Yeah. Well, and there's a bakery in town here that they've started to do. Well, they've had for quite a while doing more lunch things, you know, sort of if you come in at noon, there's a few extra things in the case. They're doing like grilled cheese and all that stuff on their good bread. And it's also, it's another area for creativity. If someone's got that bug, you know, sandwich can be pretty good art as well. Right. So,
Yeah. We've been making Roman style pizza.
Oh, nice.
Too. Yeah. And, we're at a point right now where we're like, okay, so we can either continue with this, which is, it works, we have it and it's great, or we can just try to something different. So we're trying to do a few more and like interfaces, like probably different pies and make them brown and make a different kind of dough and see how can we market it. And that's it. That's another lesson. Like, marketing. I suck at marketing. Like, I'm not, I don't have it in me, but you need to do it.
Yeah. So for you, for the type of place you have in the neighborhood that you have, what kind of, when you say I need to do it, what are you thinking of?
Planning. Let people know. Listen, next week we're going to have this salad, this soup, this grilled cheese, and this and this dessert. That's it.
It's as simple as that. Yeah.
Simple as that. I feel that the first year of the bakery was Well, you know how it goes. It's too much. Like, you don't know. It's like the first 15 minutes of Saving Private Ryan. It's like you're running around. You can't hear anything. You're sleep deprived. And
yeah.
In the best case scenario, you are running with your arm under your other arm. And, and just like, sure. But right now, that sense of urgency is kind of like I relinquished control, which was another big lesson. So now we have a couple of leads in the team that are taking ownership over front and back.
Yeah.
And trust, that was another big lesson. Like, that was like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Let's make this work.
Yeah. Trust is so huge. Oh, that's so funny. When we opened up our place, we started just making bread because that's all we could kind of fit in the production schedule at the time. But there was always this plan that, you know, we would be doing like cookies and muffins and, you know, some of those sweets as well at the start. And I just remember the first couple of months before we got that rolling, and, you know, people would be ducking their heads and it's like, today? No, not today. And then they come back and it's like, yeah, today, you know, and it was like the folks, like our neighbors and stuff in the mall that we were in, it'd be like, today? And then it just finally got to, you know, where it's like we were getting into doing like specialty, it was just been Valentine's Day. We would do like a special Valentine's Day box. Mm-hmm. And then it'd be like, we have to let people know about this before we make it, you know? And it was just like, can we at least decide on what's going in the box so we can tell people what's going in the box, you know?
But how?
Yeah.
It's like, how if I have to? Like for Valentine this year, we didn't do anything because we switched bookkeeping. We migrated from one bookkeeping company to another.
Okay. Yep. And that's work. Yeah.
That's work. And then I saw myself last week, like punching in the payroll. So everyone can get paid because we lost all the platform with the migration. And I was like, okay. But it's just that like we did. I didn't do anything. And one of the regulars shows up yesterday. He's like, hi, where's the Valentine stuff? And I was like, man, I'm sorry.
It's
all bookkeepers. It's a lot. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
But there is this beautiful warm chocolate cake with rye flour that if you won, you can draw hard and you can just give it to your loved one.
Yeah,
but it's a lot. But that's it. And today I kind of like did, okay, so we're gonna do this for Easter, and we're gonna do this for Mother's Day, and we're planning to do this lunch program for the week after, and then hopefully if that picks up, we can do something else. And we're still gonna see how the whole team feels about the pizza migration, if we're gonna start. And we're going to start doing, and then we're going to let people know. But it's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I guess, I guess that's the thing that bears, we all need to stay in reminded of. It's like, even to say I'm serving the people, you know, in your case, in the Junction in Toronto, it's like, You can get focused and you can get small, but it's like that doesn't take away the number of things you have to do. It's endless. And so good on you for taking a bit of the long view as well, right? It's like, okay, it's like, well, get on Easter. We'll start talking about Christmas when it gets hot out, and there you go. And,
we for Christmas was we pulled it off. It was like, we were going to make, we made Stolen for the first time.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And we made two kinds of Stolen, and we're going to like program ourselves to do that, because last year, because the space at the front was looking a little bit bare, we ended up buying tons of retail from, you know, suppliers like chips and canned, this high-end canned fish from Portugal and from Spain and olive oil. And that's kind of like a specialty stuff that people tend to get with bread. But man, that put me in a huge cash flow jam. And last year, like at this time last year, And lesson learned. I was like, no, we're going to make the retail this year. And we're going to make the Stollen. We're going to make the Panettone. The Panettone, we make the Panettone with, in a collaboration with Carlo Lazzarino. Mm-hmm. And that was another learning curve. Like we pump out 600 pieces.
Wow.
But those 600 were supposed to be 800, but we lost two batches of 120 Panettones because we don't have, like, we had a good oven and we had, but we don't have a proper proofer retarder. We had a couple of hot boxes and that's how we do it.
Right.
But then it comes to a point when from that primo impasto, if you bring it up all the way to 30, 31, that butter is this close to breaking. And it broke in a batch that Carlo was doing, and then it broke in a batch that I was doing by myself. And it's just, you end up with this huge, like 40 kilos of scrambled eggs, because it looks like scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
And that was huge. But I was like, you know what? And we're going to make one last batch for New Year's. And we did it. And, but again, learning and like taking the beating.
Yeah. You're still up on the whole idea. We're learning, we're taking the beating, but we're going to keep on rolling.
We're going to keep on rolling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I feel that we are, it's like, we can't complain. Like we have a loyal following here in the neighborhood. We have some people that come from other neighborhoods as well, just to buy their bread and stuff.
Yeah.
And get into a lot of heat to get a slicer. Like we had a slicer and then it broke, and then the technician and then the technician never showed up again. So we have this old Olivier like slicer, like from, I got for $1,000 from a guy who had it in his garage, and it's like 40, 50 years old. And then, so I'm like, okay, so this guy's not going to show up. So I'm going to find out, and I get to partstown.ca, and I'm going to try to find the blades, and I'm going to do it myself. But something else to do. But yeah, like that's the other, we have people who come from, we have a gentleman who comes from probably Richmond Hill, and that's like a good 40-minute drive.
Yeah.
And then he's like, man, did you fix the slicer? And I was like, no. So he's like, oh, okay, well, give me four. I was okay, but you used to get four slices. Like what? And then you're getting the same amount of bread that is that slice. So what's the big deal? Like, so we're getting into a lot of heat for that. We should get a slicer, and if we wanna grow the wholesale side of the bread business, we should get a slicer as well. But you know, it's cash flow too.
Yeah. I don't know. As soon as you get a slicer, or well, and you've got one, so you know, right? But it's like yeah. Then they want to slice it when it's still hot, and then it's just you get in that slippery slope. And
yeah.
I resisted for a long time, and then I finally had a customer say, like, you know, like, I'll lend you the money if you want to buy a slicer. It's like, and it's like, oh, you got me now. So yeah,
sure.
Oh, I hated that.
Sure. It's yeah. too much, and then people do not understand that you have to bake the day before to slice
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So it's like, why can't I slice it fresh? And I was like, because it's going to break the slicer again.
Yeah. Or you get, and I've seen some pictures of the beautiful ryes that you make, and they want to slice those. And it's like, oh my God. Like,
it's like, why?
Yeah. Wait two days now. Yeah.
Wait, exactly. Don't do this. Like, don't. Like, yeah. It's not like we're going to, it's like that Philip Seymour. It was Jack Black or Philip Seymour Hoffman in High Fidelity who was like, can you sell me this song? He's like, no. Can you sell me that? No. You're not going to buy it. No, please, no. So it's not that added, that snobbery approach. It's just like, man, like, it's not that difficult. And you probably have a knife, even the worst knife that you have at home is probably going to do the job.
Yeah. Oh, well. Thanks for this. It's been really good talking with you, Daniel.
Thank you. You too. Thank you for having me.
It sounds like you've got a really good thing going there, and I'm just happy to hear a bit about it, and I'm really happy for what you're trying to do, and I just hope it keeps bringing you joy, you know, keeps you creative and keeps bringing you joy and makes some money too.
That's it. So far, everything has been okay, and everyone is getting paid, and everything, like, everyone is Like, we're good. We're just trying to make it better. And thank you for having me, Mark.
My pleasure. I really appreciate it. Wow, that was a lot of fun. I really like this guy. He sounds like a bit of a movie buff too. I was rolling along with all of the quotes and stuff from different shows and following that. It was awesome. I feel like we kind of connected. I enjoyed so much hearing about what he's trying to do and the whole conversation around wholesale versus retail and what does that mean to your products and what does that mean about the kind of place that you're making and the kind of place that you're building and the trade-offs that you have to make to incorporate wholesale, to embrace wholesale, that kind of thing. No wrong answers in general, but for him and his vision, there is, you know, where what we want to do right now, where we are right now, there's a right decision and a wrong decision, and he's going for it. And I really like how he framed the dilemma and the decision that he made. And kind of throughout the whole conversation, I like that. It's one thing to hear, well, you know, I did this and I did that and I did that. And now I have this bakery. And it's another thing to understand or to try and portray what's important to you and why this bakery is going to be this reflection of what is important to the owner and the baker. And I think that's up front and center with Daniel and with Noctua. And I just think that's awesome. He's my kind of people. So I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I really did. I really did. And I'm so grateful that Daniel came on to talk with me and that I get to share it with you. So I hope you enjoyed this. If you did, drop me a line. I always like to hear from folks. Mark with a K at riseuppod.com. Riseuppod.com is also where you can hear every past episode. All 187 episodes are up there. Dig in. Go for it. Listen to them all. They're good. It's also where there is a support the show button where you can become a show supporter. And that's nice too. Until next time, work hard, bake lots, keep making the good stuff, be safe, be kind, and take care of yourself as well. Happy baking. Bye-bye.